Right, I got my script, got my tea, I've switched the phone off. Dan, have you got everything ready?
I've got my phone, that's it, and a bit of stuff I've written about Laudanum. It's
Oh,
about.
splendid, splendid. Tony will be here in a sec. Oh, here he is now. Oh, hang on. You're not Tony! Hi, and welcome to episode 70 of the Awesome Comics Podcast, a show where folks from small press and beyond discuss the world of comics and sometimes learn things at the same time. And this week, we may even get scared. Oh, I almost got something in my throat then. I'm Vince Hunt, creator of the comic series The Red Mouse from Mars. And this week, I'm joined by the creator of the brilliant superpowered webcomic Vanguard, Dan Butcher.
Hello.
And the creator of Descending Outlands, and colourist of The Red Mouse from Mars, and the man who knows far too many secrets about me. One day I may have to kill him so they don't get out. It's Mr. Sean Doby.
Hello there.
You sound like an English gent.
Well, I could go down the Tony approach.
Yes. You can
you
tell.
Drop in a few of those. Is it me?
Yeah.
Is it my turn?
Yeah. We won't have any of that.
We're doing that now.
Yes, as you can tell, folks, Mr. Tony Esmond isn't here this week. He couldn't be with us. But, however, he wanted to give you lovely people out there all a message. So he recorded a little something. So here it is, a little message from Mr. Tony Esmond to all you lovely people. Well, wasn't that wonderful? Wasn't that emotional,
cheers,
guys?
Cheers, Tony, yeah.
That was
beautiful.
That was beautiful.
Heartfelt words.
That was poetic. Absolute poetry. Tony Esmond he's a pillar of the community and truly the man of our time. But he couldn't be there this week, and it may be because he's scared, because this week it's the Halloween special, folks. Yes, when this comes out, it will actually be Halloween, so we're actually sort of well-timed. Who would have
current
thought that?
For once.
Yeah. Once. That's true. We're normally lagging behind everyone else.
Yeah.
No one can ever tell. No. It's a well-oiled machine.
It's a well-oiled machine that's broken down somewhere or just off the M25.
And it's been burnt.
It's the Halloween special this week, so naturally the focus of the show is going to be the horror genre.
You never told me that.
It's not like you to be unprepared, Sean. From the mighty EC books of old through to the night creatures created by the big two, and the depth of amazing talent on display in modern independent comics, because there's an awful lot of horror books out there. Horror is very much alive and well. I don't know about you guys, but it always gets me when people say like certain genres are sort of like, I don't know, inverted commas, dead, you know. Do you know when they say, oh yeah, the Western is dead, the horror is dead? I don't think any sort of genre of storytelling ever dies, does it?
No, of course not.
I think it's more about visibility and sort of mass media, isn't it, really?
Yeah, certain things just come to the forefront. I mean, everyone's saying at the moment about the Western is dead, but the superhero franchise and film, you know, is just there, but then that's not going to last, and then the Westerns will come back, and the other kind of circle of everything kind of coming.
Yeah. Well, I think with stuff like Red Dead Revolver 2 coming out next year, that might kind of herald a bit of a resurgent in Western comics. Obviously, there's stuff like Redden out there, which is fantastic.
Yeah, some great Western comics out there. Yeah. That'll have to be... That's a future topic, I think, Western comics.
Yeah, and you got Westworld as well, so...
Oh, God, yeah, which I still haven't watched. Shame on me. Shame on me.
I'll tell you what, one genre of comic that's kind of fallen out of favour, and I'm not sure it ever will come back into favour, is war comics. I think
yes.
It's kind of like,
I know what you mean.
Back in the day when kind of you kind of had Sergeant Rock and war was very propagandized, but nowadays when we can see the horrors of war, making a comic about it seems a bit flippant at times.
The adventure tales, much like with films, isn't it? Really, you don't.
Yeah.
You know, now that you know, if there's films like Saving Private Ryan, you won't get the sort of wartime adventure films so much anymore.
Yeah, it seems a bit kind of like not disrespectful, and a bit kind of
yeah.
But yeah, we do get stuff like Garth Ennis does the didn't he do the Unknown Soldier, and then like the tank.
Yes, I think he's one of the last sort of certainly in mainstream sort of comics. I would say Garth Ennis is like still sort of pushing. Yeah. I mean, that's not. I mean, there's still like strips like Commando and stuff. They're still going. It's not like war isn't being done. And there's great war books, just all over the place happening. Especially with like modern war, and you know, there's loads of stories. I mean, I'm ignorant to a lot of it because I haven't seeked out myself. So, no doubt you will get a lot of messages sort of saying, "Oh, this war book's great. This war book's great." But I think on a whole, it's not as wide. Is it?
I wouldn't say so.
Yeah.
No, anyone produces it, kind of making themselves a target. And at the moment, it's escapism, isn't it? People want to actually avoid that kind of thinking by having the fantastical and the kind of horror aspects as well that kind of distract them from it.
Yeah.
But like when we were kind of sold, well, not us, but kind of previous generations have sold stories of war, it'd be like kind of John Wayne and stuff, kind of like, say, rip roaring adventures. And then now when we're seeing like, pictures on Twitter of people getting blown up, it's not quite so appealing to kind of
there's too much media, isn't it? If you think that was the reason of the success of the early superheroes, you know, Captain America punching Nazis, it's all kind of propaganda, isn't it? And now there's no point in that kind of propaganda because everyone can go on and see it, well, depending on where they go and how tinted that image has been. But
this has gone awfully deep, hasn't it?
Do we get away from terrorism? Horror as well?
Yeah. The horrors
we've gone into Western and war.
This show is anything but standard. I think everyone will agree. But back to horror. Now, we've got some listener opinions and sort of recommendations. There's some interesting poll results to reveal. But it's just going to be three blokes sitting in the dark talking to each other, isn't it, really? That's all it is.
Yeah.
Around the campfire, should we say.
Sexy times.
I was about to say, has anyone got any scary stories? But I think Sean saying sexy times is the scariest thing I'm going to hear all night.
We see his eyes glinting at you over the firelight.
Oh. You'll never see me.
Oh, dear. I mean, basically, to start this question off, let's start with a broad sort of two-point question. As comic readers and creators yourselves, how do you actually feel about the horror genre in comics? And are you a fan of it, per se?
Sean, you go for it.
Oh, cheers. Yeah, slam that one on me, right here. Yeah, let's take the guest. Let's kick the seat out from underneath him, punch him on the floor. Maybe that's a bit harsh. I mean, I think, personally, besides kind of your mainstream kind of superhero kind of stories, I think horror to me is the second best one that's actually out there anyway. I mean, in some aspects it is actually the best. It's just how it's actually done which dictates kind of how good it is. It's like with horror films, really, you kind of, it's more what you don't see, but then trying to convey that onto an actual page is kind of, well, either you're going to have some fucking amazing writing going on there and just black strips or you have to get some kind of a unique kind of artist. It's like when you watch an entire film, like It, for example, the original TV version of that, was amazing all the way through until you got to the creature at the end, which is always the problem with films.
Hang on. Right. I'm just going to say the first half is great. Second half, I don't really care for. But that's
what I mean. You get the monster reveal at the end and it's terrible.
Yeah.
And I think with comics, you kind of, unless it's really done well, you almost get that reveal earlier because they have to draw something.
I was talking about this kind of, you got to like the, well, do comics have to throw that kind of thing of holding the monster back till the end? And I feel like as horror comics, especially for the artist's sake, you've really got a challenge ahead trying to keep that kind of suspense going, because like you say, in films you can have a subliminal or a flash of the creature, whereas with a comic, the panel's there, you can look at it as long or as short as you like and see it all for its kind of horror or not.
Yeah.
It's a very difficult one.
It's certainly something that came up like when we just put out like the general question about horror. A lot of the feeling is that it's the absence of sound, for instance, that that comics have. You know, sound is such a major thing when it comes to, like, it's certainly horror films. You know, that a horror film can live or die by its, like, its sound effects, or, you know, their soundtrack and stuff like that. And so automatically comics don't have that. So like you say, the art has to be very skillfully done, doesn't it? It has to be, I mean, what particular types of horror, if you were going to read a story, because, I mean, to say that it doesn't work in comics is obviously a stupid thing to say, because there are horror prose books, you know, horror prose.
There are some amazing ones.
Yeah, horror novels, they can creep you out, they can do anything, and they don't need sound.
You know, I would say that the difference with the kind of the horror prose is that you're working a lot more with your imagination with the prose. Yeah. Whereas with the comic, obviously, it holds your hand in regards to visuals. So it's kind of where the horror novel kind of comes into its element is it describing things to you, and you're coming up with that in your head. Whereas the comic has the kind of the drawback of, and a strength, I mean, it can be used that way, of you has to show the horror, as it were.
Yeah, it's the fine line. If you think with film, you get the visual, you get the audio, you get the score. You actually get movement of, you know, cameras and scenery and things like that to actually build everything. Whereas, you know, with comics, you're losing quite a lot of those tools. But then if you have a novel, you're just going purely on words. So you kind of have the ability that you can actually describe it all, and you almost don't have to think about what it's kind of going to look like. You can just describe how it makes you feel. Whereas comics, you've got that fine line. If you have to borrow a little bit of both, if you go too far, then you kind of lose the magic.
Do you think a lot of horror comics suffer from showing too much?
Well, if we're just talking about kind of like a monster comic where you're getting flashes of the monster, maybe so. But
it depends what your monster is, though, doesn't it, really?
True. I mean, like, if you're, say, for instance, the Samurai Slasher, and you see the Samurai Slasher, that's kind of, that's fine.
Whereas you have to see it, doesn't you? It has to be the Jason Voorhees, you know, you know, there's not the unseen killer.
If you're looking like a kind of a Jaws monster, where kind of it's taking out his victims and you're not supposed to see it, you're kind of a little more challenging, I would say. But then you've got like comics like The Walking Dead, and that's just horror from the first page, if you know what I mean. It's kind of, you're straight in, the horror is more the situation the characters are in, as opposed to what they're facing.
Because I still consider that to be a horror book. Yes, it's a soap opera at the same time. And certainly it's gone on to, you know, to huge multimedia sort of success. But the comic itself, the very basis of it is horror. You know, it always will be. And not just horror in the zombies. The zombies is the easy go-to, isn't it? As soon as a zombie is a horror monster. But once you get past that, I think The Walking Dead is a massive example of the true horror is the human beings that are in it. Because the stuff that shocks people the most is never when a zombie rips someone apart. It's when someone gets beaten to death or chopped to bits.
Kind of the zombie end, there's a couple of monsters like vampire. There's a lot you seem to be able to do with them, the werewolf. But when you kind of go to other stuff like like a merman or a mummy, there's not so many kind of allegorical tales you can come to them with, I don't think. I could be massively ignorant on that. But like, for instance, that Walking Dead, the last episode where kind of Negan... I've found it a hard watch. I kind of asked myself, why am I watching this for fun? It was really fucking hard watch. But I've not read the comic. I've got so far with the comic book, and I think the person reading it was kind of a bit disgusted with it and stopped getting it anymore.
So, yeah.
I'll tell a lie, they still got it, but I said, oh, I'm going to stop reading when we get up to level with a TV, because I don't want to... I wanted to kind of take this TV as the main source.
Yeah. Well, that's fair enough. Taking that as a starter point, here's an interesting question. Like, horror monsters, right? So this is to all three of us in the horror genre. Which ones do you think have been done too much? Or, you know, some of them you like, if I don't see a such and such comic again, I'll be quite happy. But some monsters you like, I haven't done much with. Okay, I'll go around the room, although we're not in a room, folks, this isn't like that.
I thought it was a campfire.
This is just our personal opinions, you know, and even if we say I've had enough of this one, we could turn around tomorrow and see an amazing book. involving that said monster. But let's just start with the classic, the big one. Zombies. Dan.
Thinking about with zombies, really before kind of Romero popularized them, like in the 70s with the first Night of Living Dead, they were kind of a blank slate. They didn't really exist in the way we know them now. I think maybe there's a bit of an oversaturation at the moment. I mean, I've seen a webcomic recently that kind of had zombies popping up, and they were Romero zombies, like staggering slow. They get killed by a shot through the head. And it's kind of like, I don't know, maybe we need a bit of a rethink on it. I'm not massively a fan of the sprinting zombies either, but
Sean, what about you? How do you feel about zombies?
Yeah, no, I agree. I think they're. I think the thing that made the Romeros quite good was actually more the actual interaction. You know, they were all in one building, and it's how they interacted and the kind of how they dealt with the zombies rather than the zombies themselves. I know there was a huge gore aspect of it, but yeah, I think they're just kind of overdone. I mean, I love zombies to death. I think it's
right in the head.
Brilliant, and not in a sexual way, but yeah, I think they're brilliant, but I do think they are overdone. I think there was a point where, I can't remember the name of the film now, 28 Days Later.
Yeah.
When that one came out, I think that was when it kind of reinvigorated it slightly, because it actually, that's where the zombies started kind of doing the running. But then they got away from it being zombies by actually saying it was, you know, it was rage, it was an anger thing. And that's kind of, I think, what, as we go forward, we'll discuss that the problem is people are now purposefully not just using monsters, they're actually trying to reinvent them in clever ways. And so when I actually see something now, I don't say there's a vampire. I actually say, okay, how have they done the vampire this time? That's kind of my main question on each one. So again, you've now got, they're walkers, aren't they, for The Walking Dead, not called zombies in that one. You've got different viruses, you've got fast ones, slow ones, and then you had the Resident Evil games. Obviously they branched out into it being a parasite.
You've got so it's kind of crossed comics as well.
Oh,
which
God,
takes you to a new kind of, it's blood that way is one, isn't it?
I can't remember. That is one comic we'll talk a little bit about later on.
But then for everything I see and get kind of bored with those, something then suddenly comes out and makes me kind of rethink it slightly. I mean, Warm Bodies, I watched that the other day, and that's brilliant. It's just a nice kind of different take on it, you know, a body, the people actually kind of coming back. In a comedic, romantic way.
I checked out that World War Z film. I'm a big fan of the book, and obviously the film's nothing like the book.
Yeah.
It wasn't as bad as I expected it to be. I thought it was going to be absolutely awful.
It's not terrible.
It's got a couple of moments. But yeah, I think zombies, in my personal opinion, they have been overdone, and I think for a lot of people, they are an easy go-to in terms of storytelling. Especially if you just want to, you know, you want to lock a bunch of people in a house with lots of monsters outside. It's usually a bunch of zombies, and it's not necessary just with the mainstream. It's with small press as well that you see an awful lot of zombie books, and when you go to shows, you see a lot of zombie prints. And you know, the zombies, funnily enough, I don't think they'll die now. I think we've got another good 5 to 10 years left of the zombie phase. But then again, at the end of the day, if you don't want to read it, you don't have to read it, do you? You
know, yeah. But, I mean, it can keep on chugging on. The same we said with the superhero stuff.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have thought we'd been still riding the wave, as it were, now, with, like,
the
film's still coming out.
It's like anything, isn't it? You know, if the story's good, it doesn't matter what it is. Do you know what I mean? If there's an amazing zombie story out there that I haven't read yet, you know, bring it on. That's all I say.
Yeah.
I see some, but sometimes it can be a little bit of a go-to. I don't, you know, so I'm a bit more, I think a zombie comic is more likely to turn people off as soon as they see it on the cover.
I mean, with stuff like The Walking Dead comic being so popular on comics and TV, you're really going up against it if you bring out a zombie comic. You've got to be doing something radically different, in my opinion, to kind of
But the other considered. The other side of the coin is, it's got a huge legion of fans. There are zombie fans who won't check out anything else. You know, I know that for a fact, you know. And there's the Walker Stalker cons and things like that, you know. I think that says a lot about it. I think those particular conventions will be a good sort of testing point of how that particular monster is doing in the public.
There was Tony, isn't it? Yeah. Walker Con.
Yeah.
There was an old different zombie, kind. A zombie comic I was trying to track down from years ago. I remember reading it in my secondary school, and I've been doing online searches for it, trying to dig it up, and I can't find it. I think it might have been Deadlands, but it was essentially like a zombie apocalypse, and this kind of small, the police department had kind of managed to stay together, but this biker gang that the sheriff had killed years before had basically reanimated, but they were intelligent, and kind of the playoff between the two of them. And that was, I can remember that being fantastic, like Black and White comic, but I can't find the bloody thing. So any listeners, if that rings a bell,
yeah, get in touch.
Give us
Dan,
a shout.
Dan needs to know.
Help me, please.
You're my only hope.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you think the zombie apocalypse has been overdone?
It's happened, doesn't it?
Well, yeah. I walk around the streets and walk around the streets. I sound like a prostitute.
There's so many books that do the "it's just all kicking off"
cheap
part of the story. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It's, I think maybe Kirkman's the only one that's kind of carried it on to fruition to see how fucked up everything's got afterwards.
Yeah.
But
the thing is, yeah. I find certainly with modern comics, maybe, if there's an apocalypse, if there's a post-apocalyptic wasteland, there always seems to be zombies of some kind.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? It's like you don't get so many... Yeah, you do get the great stories like Wasteland. You know, you don't get so many Mad Max-style stories. Where that's just the way it is. There's no zombies in Mad Max, is there? But I find the post-apocalyptic world has usually got a zombie in it of some kind these days.
I think your problem with it is, unlike a lot of other characters, well, not characters, but monsters, I suppose, zombies is most of the time going to be a one-sided thing. You know, by default, they're just walking, eating creatures. They don't really have the thought process as much. So any story involving them
well,
is mainly going to
be
they're mainly going to be around the actual kind of the heroes or the people of the story. So it's just, I think, with a lot of things, it's either it's good if you actually want to have a story about a group of people that just have to survive, or if you just want an action film and you want to kill things without actually explaining who, how, or why.
So there you go. That's zombies. Right, the next one. Vampires.
was
that a sex noise, Sean? Yeah. So early on in the show, I didn't think he'd so quick.
Hey, I've done a sex week.
I obviously the inevitable bringing up Twilight is going to crop up.
Is that the first thing you mentioned, Dan? There is a world of vampires out there.
I understand, because I think it put a dampener on zombies that maybe we're vampires that we're still dealing with. Maybe we're coming to the end of that, but as soon as you say vampires, like it's the public would presumably Twilight or not me certainly, but there's a wealth of stories to tell with vampires. They've been around for ages, and I think there's still a lot more stories you can tell with them.
I think Dracula's a cock as well.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I think the original story of Dracula is actually quite cool and very good, and, you know, it's without it, you wouldn't get a lot of the spin-offs we have now. But I fucking hate it when modern-day kind of vampire things then bring Dracula into it.
Yeah.
Because he's always a shit character, every time.
I mean, I know Marvel obviously had the classic Tomb of Dracula, didn't they, in the 70s, where he went up against Doctor Strange. I think that may be, in my eyes, the best example of the mainstream comics bringing a character like that into the world. And he was a force of nature in the Marvel comics in the 70s and stuff. And, you know, so he earned his place, and he stood side by side with this Marvel universe. But most of the other times you see him, you're right, he doesn't seem to be... I never really feel like Dracula is... For me, Dracula is the big daddy, isn't he, really? He's Darth Vader... Before Darth Vader even existed, you know.
But he's always quite camp in anything he's actually in. I kind of notice.
Yeah, I find also in sort of modern day sort of tellings as well that they go more for the sort of Castlevania look or the medieval look. You know. You know, I mean, certainly the long cape and stuff was born from the Universal Studios films, and you know that obviously isn't probably, you know, that's not what he would have looked like, maybe, but. Yeah, you don't see much of the classic sort of look that we all know of Dracula
I mean, I hated him in the third Blade movie as well. I think
he was one of the most
terrible.
I mean, it's a bad movie in general, but that in itself was shocking.
If Dracula is supposed to, if Dracula's in a Blade movie, he should be the big villain, and he shouldn't be a jumped up heavy, which essentially is what he was, wasn't it?
Yeah, he was. Exactly.
Yeah.
If you're looking like the apex of the kind of the vampires in that story, and then you looked at the production design of some of the ones in the second film who had been alive for hundreds of years and they were all emaciated, you'd expect the Dracula character to be taken to like even more so than that, and they kind of just absolutely fucked that film up. Dracula handled in the episode of Buffy when he turns up, that was really good. Just absolutely played on all the cliches and it was just handled as
years.
A joke.
Yeah. Nah. Yeah, and they got rid of him pretty quickly, didn't they?
Yeah, it was like he's around for one episode. He's off again. It's just a joke.
Yeah.
Done it, one and done.
But Dracula's also a license because it's public domain. Anyone can use him, though, can't they, really?
Yeah, it's like all the spin-offs we've actually got from Dracula's and Van Helsing's and all that kind of side of it.
Yeah. Would either of you be tempted to in the future to take not that story, not adapt that story, but to take a character like that and work with it in some way?
That's a hard one.
Yeah,
I think I would. Yeah, do you think you could bring anything new to it?
No, I'm not that original.
that's a designer talking.
Yeah. Put it in space and call it Dracula 2050.
Yeah. Yeah.
Starring Casper Van Dien. Oh no, that's it.
From Starship Troopers.
That's an awful film. That one.
Dracula in the 1980s. I don't know. He has become a cop in Miami.
What would you call it?
Don Johnson.
Would you? Yeah. He's not wearing any
Miami
socks.
Bites.
He's got like moccasins, and he's not wearing any socks. And he's
he always goes out at night to solve crimes.
Yes, I like this. Know. I think we're going to.
That was like
somewhere.
Forever Night. That show. I still love that.
Yeah. God, bloody hell.
Shit, see, it's already been done.
Yeah. But yeah, just reining this back in for you, Vince. Doing your job.
Yeah, thanks.
But yeah, I think the thing with vampires is they have been going around for quite a while, not just because they're immortal. But again, going back to what I touched on before, it's actually now how they get reinvented that actually makes them good. Because I kind of thought, okay, well, I've seen most incarnations, I've kind of had enough of this now. But then in Blade 2, going to film, obviously, you know, when Del Toro kind of then changed the look of it, kind of having the pump mouth, you know, it suddenly made them fucking scary as shit.
I love the way you use the term pump mouth. Lovely.
Well, it's like the Strain series of books, comics.
Again, that is fantastic.
You've kind of paired it back for its roots, the vampire myth, as opposed to being these wondrously good-looking people who kind of you'd willingly give your blood to. They're now these horrible parasitic creatures, and it's absolutely disgusting. And they would have power over you physically if they went after you. And like they did in Blade 2.
Do you think that sort of angle has been explored enough in comics? Or do you think do you think people go for more, you know, the attractive monster?
I think that's the only route really left at the moment. I think everyone's so used to seeing everything and everyone wants to be original that they purposefully go down the route of reinventing. Because the problem you've got at the moment is because it's been going for so long and because of things like Twilight and those kind of films, the more commercial ones, they've kind of romanticised and made all these kind of horrible monsters actually quite approachable and quite friendly. In a way, and because we're all desensitized now from watching everything on telly and all these wars and news and all that kind of stuff, that nothing seems as scary as it did back then. So now the way to do it is to try and make these monsters actually something scary, something either you can't see or can't control, or that physically just repulses you.
I think that's one of the things that was brilliant about the 30 Days of Night. Certainly that first series is just phenomenal. You know, I mean, when I first heard about it, it was naturally, you know, this comic series had been, the license had been bought for like $1 million. You know, there was a lot of press about that, this small book. And then I just read the synopsis.
It was Raimi, wasn't it, bought it originally?
I think it might have been. Yeah,
really?
Yeah. Okay. Sam Raimi, his production company, I think, had something to do with it. But then you read the synopsis and then you just think, this is just let me read
how
it
now. How has this not already been done?
Yeah, how has this not been done before? And that was definitely, that was also treating, the vampires were horrible, horrible monsters. And, you know, I know that that is still a series that's getting, it's still doing spin-offs now, isn't it, I think? They're still doing mini-series and stuff. I've left that sort of series and story behind now. But that first book, I loved that first book.
Yeah, it's the perfect example is what you were saying, Dan, though. That is one of the ones where it doesn't hide the monsters. It just puts them straight away.
Yeah.
This is a monster. Yeah. But that's where the actual artwork comes into it, because, you know, Ben Temple Smith stuff, you know, I'm in love with that kind of style anyway. It's just fucked up. And just even looking at it makes you feel a bit uncomfortable. Not necessarily because of it's scary. It just looks so unusual. You just kind of aren't sure what you're looking at all the time. You just know it's nasty.
I think that's also a series that we were talking about, like the pacing and the storytelling. I think that's a good example of how to sort of get the atmosphere right, because you don't really see what the massive, you know, the first issue of that is pretty much all the setup. You know, you're in the, you know, everyone's leaving the town. They find all the mobile phones have been broken. You know, the isolation is built up, and it's only as it, the probably the last 10 pages and the classic cliffhanger of when you see those vampires, this army of vampires approaching the town. That's a perfect sort of, you know, you're in then, you know, you've got the atmosphere. You give them that exclamation point right at the end, and then it's like it's off to the races, you know. But I remember reading it, and
the races.
Certainly, when I saw the scene with the big pile of mobile phones that the coppers had found, it was like a mystery at first. They were like, you know, what's happening here? You know, why is it all these mobile phones that have been stolen over the past month in the town being found here, and they're all burnt and broken, and the communication was all being cut off? Yeah, and just those sort of horror elements. I love horror atmosphere like that that's built up. I think, for me, it's all about atmosphere. I mean, that's why The Thing is my favourite film. I think it's one of the most atmospheric films of all time. And it's that isolation. It immediately set. It doesn't jump in with here's a kill straight away. Here's your gory scene. And that's all well and good. We all love that. But
I tell you what I really like about The Thing is that all the characters and all the people there are equals. Yeah. There's not a hero character, and it's only as things transpire and move on that MacReady has to kind of step up.
Yeah,
because he realizes like what's going on, and he's the only one to kind of, he has to step up and try and match wits against this alien.
Yeah. Plus, so, it also puts doubt in your mind about him as well the first time you watch it, because you're questioning yourself. First time you watch it, you know, you're doubting the person that you kind of thought was going to be the hero.
Yeah.
I could talk about that film forever.
I've lent it to someone I work with who's never seen it, and I said, don't read anything about it. Don't read the back of the DVD. Just watch it and let me know what you think.
Yeah. Have they yet?
I lent it to him on Friday. So hopefully when I see him on Monday.
Yeah. Well, it's the perfect weekend to watch it, the Halloween weekend, as it were.
Yeah, indeed.
Yeah. So vampires, we still think there's a bit more life in them then?
Yeah, I would have said no, but like we've said, you know, with like Blade 2 and The Strain more recently, you know, people are just coming up with more ingenious ways of actually making it happen.
I think you kind of find that sometimes. You know, you think initially, oh no, I've seen that to death. Oh no, this one's good. Oh no, that one's good. And then you suddenly realise that, you know, you do like it more than you think you do.
I'd imagine it'd be the same with most the monsters, as in when someone comes along and puts a spin on it you didn't see.
Yeah,
it makes the telling of the story interesting again.
Yeah,
but as far as kind of like when we say zombies and vampires in their current state and the current way people they're being handled,
yeah,
they feel like it's a bit we've kind of seen this and done this.
Yeah, I mean it says a lot about vampires that, for instance, Marvel have consistently tried to put them into the Marvel universe in one form or another, whether it was Dracula or it was I always say his name,
Mobius.
Mobius, isn't it? Yeah. Mobius, the living vampire.
Who wants plasma?
Yeah.
Classic. Yeah, the main thing I remember from the animated series.
The animated series. Yeah.
Plasma.
Yeah, amazing. That was a great series. That was.
I always find it hard with a vampire being a good guy. It's different with obviously like Blade, because he's half vampire, but. They should be the bad guys. It should be like, I can't remember when they get the kind of, they become vampire. They're part of them's not, it's not them anymore. They're actually kind of some kind of demon inhabiting them, and they're just only using it as kind of a vessel.
Well, that's the sort of Buffy style, isn't it? That's the Buffy style vampire. And I'm kind of a bit tired of the vampire hero who just constantly regrets everything. He's like, the things I've done, oh, woe is me. You know, let's play the Cure.
You've been watching the Vampire Diaries again, haven't you?
Yeah, I mean, I just finished a marathon today. It was wonderful. Yeah, right. Okay, the next one, one that's very close to my heart, werewolves.
Yeah, I mean, I've almost the point of ignorance on werewolf comics. I've had a hard time thinking one.
It's interesting. I love werewolves. I don't know how many times I've seen a really, really good werewolf comic that I've loved.
No, there's one indie one, isn't there, that you know, Vinny? I can't remember who she is now who draws that one.
Tom McCulloch did Who Needs the Moon, which is an amazing series that I've raved about a few times on the show. There's also an Avatar book called Ferals. Have you ever heard of Ferals?
Yeah.
That is brutal as fuck, that book. But that's proper sort of like biped sort of werewolves as well. That's quite cool. I mean, I prefer my werewolves on two legs rather than four legs, but that's just me.
I mean, with American Werewolf, that kind of, again, that was a genre that everyone would have been shrugging their shoulders at until that film came around.
Yeah.
And kind of spun it again on its head.
Mm. Yeah.
I struggle to think. I mean, Kirkman did a Werewolf by Night? No, that's not Marvel. Yeah. He did a werewolf comic relatively recently, but that was more a superhero werewolf.
Oh, what, The Astounding Wolfman? Oh, yes. I love that. That's one of my favourite books, actually. Jason Howard as well. Amazing artwork in that. He's doing some actually killer work at the moment, Jason Howard. Because he was on Trees.
Okay.
Yeah, he mixed up his style for that. Anyway, I digress. Yeah, so werewolves is one that you don't see so much, would you say?
No. Yeah, definitely.
Do you think?
Yeah, I couldn't tell you any, to be honest.
Do you think it's because people, are not quite sure how to handle it, or do you think that there's not so much avenue for exploration in terms of what to do with the characters?
It's probably me. I find that the stamp hasn't been put on that werewolves of, this is what they're about. I mean, that's been done with vampires and zombies to kind of death. There's a half a dozen stories you can tell. Use them as allegorical kind of instruments for the tale. But with werewolves, I find it very difficult.
Yeah.
Isn't it Anathema? Isn't that it?
Oh, Anathema. Anathema.
That's the one.
That was a fun book. I got one of those. Yeah.
Yeah, that's the only one I really can ever think of when I think of actual werewolves in comics.
Yeah. And there are some, there's plenty of great sort of werewolf stories out there. I just know it.
I mean, Marvel had the Werewolf by Night.
Yeah, which I've never read any of, but I kind of want to go back and get some old issues of, actually. I really do.
Obviously, they had the awesome Catwolf.
Catwolf is a classic. But what I love about Werewolf by Night, what was the name of the character who was Werewolf by Night?
It was Jonah Jameson's son, wasn't it?
It was... I think it was Jack Russell is his name.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Jack Russell was the name of Werewolf by Night. Shoot me if I'm wrong.
Didn't Jonah Jameson's son also turn into a werewolf at some point?
He's done lots of things, hasn't he? I was thinking of
he was an astronaut as well.
Yeah, he's done a bit of everything. Yeah, it's a talented family, Simpson.
Yeah.
The way they grow moustaches in that family, absolutely marvellous.
Oh.
Right, and just,
and we're
just
right back to horror.
Yeah. Two more classic ones, just quickly. Mummies. You don't really see them much, do you?
Yeah, same story.
The only mummy, I think they're quite hard to do, though. The only one I can think of, which isn't even comics, is Mum-Ra from Thundercats.
I was going to say that. Obviously, you got the film versions, but that's it.
Yeah,
no, again, that's kind of not one I've come across.
Do you think that's one that could be done? Well, do you think there's lots of potential? Surely there's lots of potential for some scary mummy stories.
Well, I'd say 9 out of 10 times, if I picked up a horror comic in small press, it would have heavy Lovecraft leanings.
Yes, that's very much.
Because it's so rich and so many things you can do with it.
Yeah.
But
that's all that could almost suffer from the zombie sort of virus, as it were, as well, because there's so much of it. It seems to be a horror go-to these days, and that's speaking as a massive Lovecraft fan. But, you know, tentacle beasts and eldritch-type monsters are very much... If you want to make something creepy or you want to make it definitely horror and weird fiction, then you're going to put in a monster like that.
I think mummies, by definition as well, though, they're very singular. You know, you don't have a huge tribe of people mummified, or at least, you know, you might want to, I suppose. But, you know, where it's not a disease or an infection or anything like that. It's usually just one creature, and as such, they're normally the bad guy.
Mm. Yeah, that's true. Do you think you could... I mean, every time I say something on this show, I always think someone's going to message in and tell us exactly what we've forgotten. So, but right now,
I hold my hands up in ignorance.
Yeah,
I'm completely ignorant on a lot of this stuff.
Yeah,
I never put my hands down.
He's always prepared just in case. but do you think there hasn't been a sort of like mummy superhero so much, is there? I mean, a lot of these sort of horror monsters, someone's taken them and you see like a heroic version of one of them, but I can't think of a mummy off the top of my head.
My mind was trying to think what a mummy would look like, but the rags, but then done up in a clothes kind of situation. Yeah. I just went straight to Dark Man.
Yeah. That's true. Yeah.
But you think essentially a mummy is a zombie of sorts. It's going to be it's a reanimated corpse. It's going to be really emaciated.
Toilet
roll. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So once you kind of like drop that, the toilet roll, the roll with the bandages off, it's just a corpse again, isn't it?
The toilet roll.
We couldn't afford bandages, you brute.
Yeah.
It's the cheap Halloween costume. A couple of toilet rolls.
Yeah, very, very true.
I'm quite large. I need more than a couple.
All right, and last one, mermen, or like creature from the Black Lagoon type creatures.
Merman. Yeah, I think it suffers with the same problems with the mummy.
Yeah, I can tell that the last two. I mean, the first ones, I can tell that obviously we've got a lot to say, and you know you can immediately pick out some classic sort of examples. But as it goes on, you know,
that's where they're not used as much.
They're not used as much. Do you think that's essentially affected the way, you know? If you had a lineup of great books, you know, vampire, werewolf, blah blah blah, mummy and merman, do you think rather than choose like a mummy, you go for a vampire book?
Well, I'd say like with a zombie book, is the kind of you got the subtext of it, the world being against you, and like everyone out to get you and chasing you around. It's everything we can identify with vampires, the kind of the whole immortal angle and kind of living forever. Werewolf is kind of like the bestiality and feral sort of nature against you. But what do mermen and the mummies say? They seem to be like one note monsters that don't really have anything else to them.
A mummy, essentially, the story is all played out by that individual's backstory, isn't it? It's always whoever the person was turned into the mummy, there is your...
It's the curse.
Yeah, that's the story around it. Whereas mermen, they're more of a blank slate, aren't they? I can't think of any classic sort of... There's certainly literature merman stories, are there?
There's the one where she gets legs and has a talking crab. I think her name is Ariel.
Under the sea.
And then she burns down the entire kingdom.
I cannot believe, one, Sean, you made a Little Mermaid reference, and two, Dan Butcher, you sang Under the Sea.
We've got a Disney DVD CD in the car, and if I'm in the car with my wife or son, the Disney CD is on.
It's
Under the Sea, fucking Aladdin, and there's another one, and there's so many times.
Sea, fucking Aladdin.
There's so many times. I'm going to punch this CD eject button and then toss it out the window like a frisbee, but I hold myself back.
Down with the rage, Dan. Down with the rage. Oh.
Right, let's get past these lies to the truth. Which one do you sing along to, Dan? Come on.
No, quite partial to the Pirates of the Caribbean theme when that comes on.
But that hasn't got any words.
Yeah. I mean, unless it does hoist the colours.
Yeah. I'd start swaying violently over the road when it's...
Leaning out the window with one eye closed. Going,
oh, dear.
Like, holding the skull mast out like a flag.
Oh dear. People are learning so much about
us. But if I'd say to anyone listening, if you know of a merperson comic,
yeah,
and phone this number now.
Yeah, let us know.
Yeah, have you been touched by a merman? Yeah, definitely let us know, because I know there's certainly horror's obviously a massive genre, and there's a lot of horror fans out there. So let us know if there's any classic, big or small press books that we need to check.
I know Tony right now has just got a wealth of information he could give us on this subject.
Yes, he always does. Yeah. Probably from comic books from about 1914, you know, when he was buying them when he was a kid.
Fucking hell.
the Copper Age. I don't know whatever it was. No, love you, Tony. Don't hurt me.
Did you just say cock rage?
Cock rage? No, Copper Age.
Oh. Tony's a young man, though.
Trust me.
Cock rage.
Cock rage is a very different thing. And speaking of different things, let's get the answers to the first poll that we put out this week. Yep. Now, grow up, Sean. We asked the question, have you ever been scared or creeped out by a horror comic? Now, the answers we had was yes, all the time, no, never, or occasionally creeped out. Now, what do you think the results would be of that? Which one do you think is the overriding winner?
No, never.
Sean?
Occasionally creeped out.
Oh, Sean's won this one. Occasionally creeped out was the winner with 62%. I say it's a winner, it's just opinions, isn't it? No, never, 29%. And yes, all the time, got 9%.
Okay.
I'm surprised at that. Yeah, I'm kind of surprised that... I don't know. I don't know why I was surprised that people would say yes.
I'm surprised because I can't think of any specific comics that have done that to me, but I'm not surprised because generally the most freaked out I ever am is not actually from watching anything or listening to anything. It's when I kind of think about it after the fact.
Yeah.
So I can see how, you know, some people might kind of just read a comic and go, oh yeah, that was brilliant. And then later on just think, but what if that murderer was around here?
I mean, I mean, for us, we've seen a lot of, like, I guess because we watch more of that media, we read more of those books, I guess you become more numb to it, you become more acclimatized to it, don't you? So I wouldn't say I've ever been scared by a comic, and certainly I never used to be creeped out. I never saw stuff that I was creeped out so much, but over the past couple of years, there have been some really well done, sort of unnerving sort of stories. I saw Anthea West's Sleep Tight, for instance, that I spoke about, the Dublin creator. She put out this book that's all about creepy stories, like monsters that just sit at the end of your bed or weird ghosts. You know, it's all based around when you're trying to get to sleep. And that's genuinely creepy because of the way she handled the story and like some of the visuals. I don't want to put any spoilers. There's someone trying to... They're sleeping in like a double bed, and the bed has a history of its own. Do you know what I mean? Like it memorized all of the people that have slept in it before, and this person sleeping in it sort of sees ghostly apparitions of the person that slept in the bed before.
Yeah.
And most of the time they're normal, but then there's one truly creepy one, and she actually focuses on this panel of this creepy sort of apparition, and that was just really well done. You know, and I think a great example of like if you draw the right, you know, you can draw a really creepy image, you know, I think. And I mean, I don't, do you think you could do a scary monster, Dan? Like when I say scary, I don't mean giant claws, you know, something that's going to tear you apart.
Yes.
But something that's going to genuinely sort of, you know, when you close the book, it's going to be in your head for the next couple of hours.
You know
what I mean?
The story I mentioned, the comics I mentioned last Halloween on our show, was that the Berserk comics, and they're really horrible. I mean, in a good way, they absolutely do the job. It was recently I got a book out for my son, and we was reading it through. I can't remember the name. It was the Charlie and Lola kids TV show.
Yeah,
and the little girl was constantly talking about her best friend, like an imaginary friend, and okay, and read the book through. And the next night I read the book through, but we had the blinds slightly open, and what they'd done is printed the best friend on every page, the imaginary friend, but in like a gloss ink. So looking straight at the page, you couldn't see it. But when you tilted really it, the light caught it, you would see it. And if you had something like that all the way through, it would be really good.
That's
just
amazing.
A little affair like that. I didn't notice the first time I read it through.
I love touches like that. That's really good. Yeah.
So if you kind of applied that kind of thinking to doing a horror book or horror comic, I think you could get something really effective.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I was I had a quick look around before actually kind of going on the cast, and I ran into Witches, Scott Snyder's one.
Oh, that's okay.
And it's the first issue of that is just brilliant how they've done it. They've done it from the point of view of the wife, and the husband's kind of covering the wife's eyes, and you just kind of see through fingers. So you can see kind of a little bit of fingers, just a little bit kind of what's happening in the room. And I think the witch is kind of stealing the child, and this like all through he's just saying, gosh, just close your eyes, just don't look at it. And but all the way through it, you just see it through the cracks of fingers, and then it just blackness.
Yeah,
just fantastic way of doing it.
That's a really good book. I mean, I've only read the first trade, but that's definitely a very sort of creepy and unnerving book, you know, the way. And it's the writing with the art, because Scott Snyder I know he does mainstream DC books, but he's a big horror fan, you can tell.
Mm-hmm.
You know, did you ever see his book Severed? Did you ever see that one?
No, I didn't see that one.
It's a prohibition story about like a sort of homeless kid who follows like this door-to-door salesman around, but he's also like, there's something really weird about him. There's something off about him. That's a brilliant sort of dark thriller that could quite easily be a film as well. I mean, it's proper sort of horror. It's, you know, but all told with character. And that's what I like about that. I highly recommend that as well. When we did this poll, we got a few sort of replies from it. One of the first ones was John Cullen. Good old John Cullen.
Nice.
He said he very seldomly gets sort of scared by comics. However, the work of, and I'm going to murder this name, Junji Ito has left me genuinely unnerved. That guy's a master of horror comics. Now, I'd never heard of that name before, but then there was a whole list of people interacting with John, talking about how they loved those comics. And he sent me a link for a story that's called The Enigma of Amigara Fault, which is a short story that's all about these sort of hikers that go up to this mountain, and the mountain has got loads of holes in the side of it, but the holes are all shaped like people.
Okay.
And they go like really far into the mountain, and it's all about, why... You know, it's almost like that classic pose of, like, you know, when someone's got their arms and legs sort of outstretched. That's what all these silhouettes are like. And it's like, well, what's going on in there? How did those holes get made? And I read that, and that was genuinely creepy. I have to send you the link to that one, because it's really well paced.
He also linked to the other one that Scott McCloud talked about, the webcomic that is, I think it's Korean, and you scroll down. It's really well done, like a long kind of continuous thing. You scroll down and it tells a ghost story. I've seen it before, but that's fantastic. Really well done.
Yeah. Tom Mortimer sent the link to that one.
I think we should put all of these up on the Facebook page as well as the links.
We have to do these, because these are it's just masterful storytelling, isn't it? That's what I like about it. Mm. And I know certainly that the Japanese and Korean and, you know, the Asian sort of comics sort of culture, they do a lot of horror genre very well, I think.
They tend to do a lot of spiritualized kind of aspects as well to it.
It's very creepy and sort of, you know, it's
demons.
It's stuff that I don't, you know, the Western culture just wouldn't be capable of affecting you on that sort of level, I think. And a lot of it's also based on sort of like folklore and urban legend as well, isn't it? It sort of messes with those sort of tropes, which is always good for a horror story. So thank you to everyone who... There's lots of replies. But what I love about these polls that I've noticed is I'll put these questions up and then people will start interacting with each other. Someone will mention something, someone will reply. And that's what we love. But what we love about this is starting the discussion and learning things. I mean, for instance, I discovered a couple of new creators there that I'm going to be checking out, and we've got lots of links about it. So thank you, everyone,
for
voting. In terms of you two, have you ever been scared by a book?
No, I don't think I have.
Yeah.
I think I'm quite desensitized to a lot of it anyway. When I was really young, I think I was like far too young. I think I ended up watching Nightmare on Elm Street, and it scared the shit out of me for like months. Yeah. And then I kind of didn't watch anything horror, didn't do anything like that for like years and years, until probably late into my teens. And then I kind of watched it again, and it completely changed my view of it all. I actually found them kind of more funny or interesting of how it actually was done, or, oh, that's a good idea, how could I actually expand on it? And so it's kind of, you know, it's the same thing with comics. I think I've now kind of, because of that ethos, I look at it, and then it's kind of like, oh, that's not bad, but they could improve that. Or I'm too critical, I think, to actually just be absorbed into the story from a visual medium.
Yeah, that's fair enough. It's hard to think of a story I've been kind of affected in that way, but definitely, like, I've mentioned this many times, but the Neonomicon, when I've read that, I was like, oh, that really creaked me out.
Yeah.
It's not a nice read.
Yeah.
It made me feel a bit kind of gross.
And I think there are certain stories. I certainly, this weekend, Mark Lamming told me about, like, Miracle Man 15. And these are a lot of stories that I weren't necessarily privy to, but the characters and the things that are happening to these characters.
Oh, that's the Kid Miracle Man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. They all come together to make something quite shocking that sort of sticks with you and is a bit pretty messy.
You going to tell the story or let readers or listeners find that one out?
I think listeners should just
yeah,
check it out. I don't think I can do it justice.
It's the Alan Moore kind of taking the superhero tale and that sort of the power of the alter ego, superpowered alter ego, to the absolute extreme. And it's kind of one of those stories. Once you kind of tell it, it's kind of out of the bag. And the same way he does with the Killing Joke, you kind of make the superhero characters adult and the situation's adult. And after you do that, I mean, he always lamented the fact that he couldn't go back after some of the stuff we've written, like Watchmen. And it's like, well, once you kind of move characters on the whole kind of storytelling thing on that way, you can't, it's very difficult to step back again. But, because yeah.
Alan Moore's, I mean, obviously people talk about Watchmen and, you know, the Superman book and et cetera and all that. But in terms of horror, you know, he's been a huge influence on a lot of people, you know, from the Swamp Thing.
From Hell was fantastic.
I was just about to say that.
Tony was going to mention that.
He was one of his picks. I've never read it.
No, me neither. I've not read that one. He said it's fantastic, so I'm going to have to try and track one down.
Yeah, it's certainly going to be one of those that read the book, don't watch the film kind of things, isn't it? Really. Do you think?
Yeah, I've not seen the film, so I can't comment.
I have.
I don't mind the film. It's not that bad, Vince.
Well, I wouldn't say it's awful, but I can't remember anything memorable about it. There you go. That's all I've got to say.
Fair enough. Yeah.
Fair enough.
God, that was almost the most horrible thing I could have ever said, wasn't it?
Yeah. Utterly forgettable.
I hate you so much, I have forgotten you.
he also mentioned that Outcast does a really good job of creeping him out. And I've read the first couple of issues of Outcast, and that's another good example of a real dark atmosphere, character-building story. I haven't watched any of the TV show yet.
I really enjoyed the TV show. I think I was massively ignorant, because I didn't realise it was a comic until kind of the Robert Kirkman... it was a comic beforehand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I've seen the initial first few minutes, and it does play out very much like the comic. So in terms of adaptions... I'm quite surprised that you didn't know that was an...
No, I just had no clue whatsoever.
It's not. It's strange though, isn't it? I think, unlike The Walking Dead, which was a comic book phenomenon, Outcast was one of those ones that, you know, it hasn't had 5 years of being Outcast before it became a TV show.
Yeah.
I mean, it was like the comic's only been out for like 6 issues and all of a sudden the TV show is going to overtake it, and it's already its own thing anyway, isn't it?
Mm.
You know. On to the next poll. Let's see what you think about this. This is a simple yes no one. Have you ever read a horror comic that's gone too far in terms of story and or shock value?
this was... I would definitely say that Neonomicon again. That kind of it went a bit too far for me.
Yeah, that yes. Yeah, that. So you would say yes to that, would you?
Yes. Yeah. There was another example I had that I thought that's. I wouldn't say crossed because that's kind of that's fucking horrible. But
now it's interesting.
It's a little bit tongue in cheek with that.
But true, but crossed kind of is that for me. I
just a bit too much.
I read sort of a couple of issues and I was like, nah, it's not for me. I'm out. Do you know what I mean? But the people that love it love it. But it's just, I don't know. I can't get on board with it. What about you, Sean? Have you ever read anything that's gone? You know, you've found distasteful in some way, or just sort of like, oh, that's a bit off.
No, I can't really think of anything. I'm keep trying to. I think I vaguely remember like Killing Pikmin started going a little bit kind of OTT towards the end.
That one's very much about a child murder as well, isn't it? So
yeah, it touches on other areas, doesn't it?
Yeah. The results of this poll were very close, which in terms of our audience and the people who voted, do you think a lot of them are going to have been shocked, or do you think they're all dead inside?
I think they're dead inside.
Yeah, we had the thing a couple of weeks ago that said they're all dead inside. So I'd say that edges out the other one just.
With 59% to 41%, yes. But there's a lot of people who think that some horror comics have gone too far.
Really? Oh, yeah. Interesting.
Here's some of the replies. Mark Lamming got in touch with a classic. To me, Faust always felt like it was going there. Have you ever seen Faust?
Yeah, Faust. I've seen a couple of issues of it. It kind of
it's pretty fucked up, isn't it?
Yeah, it's pretty fucked. Yeah,
yeah,
pretty fucked.
Yeah.
Stuck under the radar, and that's totally. As soon as you said Faust, I was like, "Yep."
Yep. One of the replies, Daniel Williamson replied to Mark and said, "Jesus Christ, Faust definitely takes the cake with Cross." So yeah. There you go. JP_Jordan said, "Walking Dead feels like that now." Which is quite interesting. It comes back to what you said earlier that, you know, I think Walking Dead is definitely, it's still a powerhouse, isn't it? But I find it fascinating that has turned so many people off. And it's never the zombies' fault, which should be a t-shirt by itself, shouldn't it, really? But it's always what the humans do to humans and the graphic nature of it. Do you think, I mean, how do you feel about it, Dan? You know, is it? Do you think they go too far with that book?
I don't know. It's kind of.
Is it because these horrible things that happen to people that readers etc. love that have a connection with? Do you think that?
No, I would say it kind of goes beyond that. I mean, you don't want to spend your spare time reading and looking at monstrosities all the time. I mean, with the stories, we're reading these for a certain amount of escapism and then entertainment. And when they stray so far from that, and it becomes almost not a chore, but kind of, fucking hell, why am I doing this myself?
Yeah.
Without any kind of redemption, you're kind of a bit...
Well,
I mean, I'm very much for horror is always better when it freaks you out. I always find it's, like we said before, it's the things you don't see. And when you kind of start going into... You know, you've got gore or you've just got just violence. And I think it's kind of gone past gore and kind of gone into violence at the moment, which is, it's a bit of a, you can get too much of it.
Mm. Yeah. Brian Vander got in touch and he said, "The Walking Dead comic lost me on its attempt of pushing the shock value / gore. Every villain was worse than the previous and scum of the earth."
Yeah, so, I mean, it's got to be that way, hasn't it, with the story?
Yeah.
Once you start treading down that path of like, well, I've got to make this one worse than the last one.
Yeah.
Where do you fucking end up? That's a pretty dodgy road you're going to start going down.
Yeah.
And like we said with the whole zombie thing, is the zombies themselves are kind of innocents in it, really. They're just mindless feeding creatures. Yeah. And so you end up having to move all of the horror and the actual psychological side of it onto the people, which is, you know, going to get graphic if the downside of it is, you know, bludgeoning mindless people.
But it makes you wonder if kind of you told a similar story without zombies and say, there's a science fiction book, I can't remember the name of it now, but a virus comes along and basically wipes out 9 in 10 people, and then the kind of the world's left barren. And that kind of pretty much goes quite tribalistic as well. I'd imagine even without the zombie thing, people would still be turning on each other in that fashion.
Yeah, like Lord of the Flies. All over.
Yeah.
Well, Sarah Harris, one of her replies to this was, I think the extreme gore only works if done with a nod and a wink and a bit of humour. That's why she'd include Crossed in that.
Yeah.
Whereas if there's no, you know, if it's told sort of deeply dead serious, you know, I don't. It's like you say, Dan. You don't. It's escapism, isn't it? You don't want to read. If you're reading something that's just going to really bum you out.
We're not babies, and we can kind of handle topics hard.
Yeah.
Kind of pushing topics, but it's to a point when it's almost like masochism, sadomasochism of watching this kind of stuff. Or why the fuck am I putting myself through this?
And also, if there's no redemption or there's no payoff, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
If it's just an ongoing sort of like just torture, if you know what I mean, you just, you know, if someone does something horrible in any kind of story, I'm the sort of person who wants that person to get comeuppance. Do you know what I mean? I think if this has happened, then immediately I'm looking forward to that person getting theirs. Do you know what I mean?
Which and we want a morality play, don't we? In certain aspects. And I think that's fair.
Yeah. SJ Webster said, I've read horror comics that confuse themselves for gratuitous gore porn. I'm not scared by blood and guts. Which I would probably agree with that. In terms of gore on the page, I'm a reader who's not necessarily so shocked by it. I'm sure there is. I'm sure I do have my limits. Everyone does. But I don't think I've read anything where I've just thought, oh, that's a bit much, because it gets to a certain point when you go too far, and then it's like, well, I can't take this seriously anyway. Do you know what I mean? This is just completely over the top.
Yeah, I mean, the kind of the gore and blood and guts, I don't really find that too much of an issue.
But it's the other stuff, it's the darker stuff. We're not going to obviously dwell on it too much, but like it says that the gore porn and like the torture porn, all of that stuff, that's for me, that's got no place with me.
Like the Hostel films.
Yeah.
It's kind of like watching an episode of Casualty with an 18 rating. It's just like you're just sitting around waiting for something absolutely horrible to happen to these characters.
Yeah.
And just don't really get anything from this.
Yeah.
No.
But
I mean, Lee Grice, one of the hosts of Small Press, Big Mouth, he replied and he said, there was a 90s Verotic. Have you ever heard of Verotic? I've heard of them.
Nah.
They were a 90s sort of publishing house. They did a lot of like really extreme sort of, I don't know, porn comics, as it were, horror porn comics, you could say, proper over the top. But he said there was a 90s erotic comic featured a schoolgirl. I'm sorry to anyone who hears this, by the way, this is quite dark. It featured a schoolgirl being gang raped and tortured for 10 pages for her dad's masturbatory pleasure. And he said afterwards, it went straight in the bin, which is where anything like that should fucking go.
Should have been burnt, I think, by the sound of it.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's a bit much. That is fucking much.
It highlights that there's an ugly, you know, we love these genres, but there's always going to be an ugly side of it. And it's just, you know.
Well, it's like we said with with Brian Vanderson about the Walking Dead bad guys. Yeah, you're stepping down this road that everyone's got to one-up the previous one to how bad they're going to be. So at some point you're going to start surely go to a point where, well, the only way I can make readers uncomfortable is if I do X, and you make that kind of jump, and that kind of comic seems to have gone straight there just to kind of be offensive possible as quickly as possible.
Yeah.
I mean, just to kind of go to films, actually, if you think of Nightmare on Elm Street, obviously, you know, Freddy Krueger's character is, you know, he's a pervert, he's a child molester, but the original films, you never had any of that. But then obviously when they started to do it, and I know they didn't go as far as they wanted to, but they wanted to try and touch on that route to kind of give it that scare factor in a different way, which you know, it kind of shows how you know, you get to a certain point and then you've got to try and tip the scale somehow, and usually taste goes out the window,
which brings up an interesting point. Jay Gunn at Gunn Comics, he said, tricky when we asked him this question. He said, tricky question. Too far in terms of personal taste, which is subjective, which was essentially what the poll was about, really. It's just personal taste. Or too far that it should be banned, which I think is an interesting question. Because obviously, you know, how far is too far? I think we've just talked about something that, for all of us, is
too far.
Is too far. But for instance, back in the 50s, the classic EC comics, you know, the comics code was created because of those Tales from the Crypt type stories that, you know, that those classic stories. If we saw something like that now, that's fairly tame, isn't it? You know, for us, that's tame.
Well, it's like The Exorcist, isn't it? You know, it's, you laugh at it now, but if you think it was banned when it first came out.
Yeah.
I mean, we're going to get eventually more and more desensitized, and like 30 years down the line, we look at the stuff now and think, that's nothing.
Hopefully not.
Yeah, I can imagine that happening. We're just kind of... but when it gets to the point where we're hopefully we'd never get to a point as a society where we're normalizing and okaying stuff like in that comic you mentioned.
Yeah, yeah.
God, I hope not. That'd be terrible.
No, and I don't, it never will be. And I certainly think in terms of... small press and indie press, you're not going to see anything like that, you know, because, well, that I know of, thankfully.
But imagine you more likely see it in small press and indie press as opposed to the bigger ones.
Wait, yeah, you're not going to see it in Marvel, are you?
No, there's no editorial process or kind of stuff to go through.
Yeah, mind you, they do anything these days, and Marvel creators will just, that's a whole different ballgame. In terms of the horror genre, then, like in terms of storytelling, do you think it's one of the easier genres to create or do? You know,
For me,
no,
personally, no.
No, I think it's horror is one of those things that it's very easy to either have an amazing idea, but then just not be able to carry it through.
It's all about execution, isn't it?
Definitely. Yeah, 100%. It's one of the rare ones that you need to have it perfect. You know, you can't just let it go at all, otherwise you just destroy the entire story.
And there's horror of all different, you know, whatever your taste is in horror, there is something in the indie and small press scene for you, you know, whether it's like ghost stories or, you know, gory stories or zombie stories. There is, you know, from like, you know, the Maddiest guys are putting out horror books, you've got the Hellbound Media guys, they're putting out books, there's loads of stuff out there and it's great. You know.
I would say, like, even Merrick kind of crosses over into the horror genre.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely.
That's the problem with horror. There's just so many sub-regions of it, because it's horror as in, you know, we're talking about horror monsters, and then there's kind of psychological horror, and then obviously you've got the horrors of humanity and emotional horror, which is obviously the ones that generally you kind of personally like to steer clear of to a degree.
Yeah, I would certainly say the ones that are... that creep me out or unnerve me are definitely the psychological horrors. They're not, you know, they're probably thrillers, you know.
100%.
Yeah. That's the things that go be like, that's just weird. I remember there was a, my trade of the year, Girls Like You, last year, there was one short in there about like just someone on Facebook liking, you know, sort of saying, you know, can we meet up sometime? And you're just ignoring that person. And then at the end of the story, the message comes up on Facebook, I'm outside your house. Do you know what I mean? And someone looks out the window and they can just see a shadow of a person standing across the street, and that's how the story ends. That to me works infinitely better than, you know, a huge sort of monster story. And I, you know, don't get me wrong, I love huge monsters. I do a comic book that normally has giant monsters in it. But if you want to get me on that psychological level, that's where you're going to get, you know, me thinking, God, that would just be creepy. You know, that would. The shudder goes down the spine, doesn't it, with that kind of stuff?
It goes to Urban Tales for me, really, because if you think of the little kind of the campfire, as we're all round one, all of the Urban Tales that you kind of generally used to hear when you were younger and that, you know, they probably lasted about a minute, but they were just enough to freak you out, like the old humans can lick too, that kind of, those kind of ones. You know, those kind of stories, they were small, but they freaked you out because they were kind of like normal, but then there was just something slightly off kilter, and you never saw anything, there was no monsters, but they're the ones that got you.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like, those are the kind of stories that work best, I think, as kind of comics, because you can just put it through narration and characterization, but you don't actually have to do any of the reveal at all if you don't want to.
Yeah. I mean, from a personal perspective, horror is my favourite genre. of all the genres, horror's my favourite. And whenever I come up with a lot of my stories, there's usually some sort of monster in it, or they're just a straight up, you know, horror story. I mean, a lot of, you know, a lot. And that's not to say, you know, it's for adults. It's going to be grown up. You know, this is in terms of like all ages horror as well. I think it's such a broad genre, isn't it? That can do so much. You know, if you think about something like Goosebumps, you know, how big were those books? Do you know what I mean? There's
massive.
Horror's got a huge audience, I think. And the reason that something like Halloween is as big as it is because of kids. And, you know, kids love scary stories. They love monsters. They love ghosts. So I think if you can plug into that, I would say that there's not necessarily enough, like, really sort of all-ages spooky books out there. Maybe I haven't seen them. Do you know what I mean?
Not anymore. Loads.
Mm. Yeah. But they're not really tapping into it. You know, we don't have like a weekly, there's not like a 2000 AD sort of book like Scream used to be in the 80s. God, I loved that. I loved Scream. You know, but that was very much sort of short anthology type stories aimed towards, you know, the sort of kids at school and stuff.
Yeah, I always remember books of like short scary tales or like the adventure books where you had to like turn to different pages to find out what happened. So those kind of ones. Yeah. Don't see so many of them anymore.
Yeah. If there is any horror books at all ages, horror books out there, please let us know because,
That'd be interesting.
I'm eager to read some. Do you know what I mean though? There's a definite avenue, isn't there? You know, I think to explore.
That's another aspect as well, you think about it. I mean, that's the kind of horror genre that actually, it's spooky, but it's not scary. Not all horror has to actually kind of traumatise and freak you out. Sometimes it can just be a good yarn, you know. You know, the old kind of, oh yeah, there was a ghost in our spare room. You know, those kind of stories that, you know, you're not scared. They're just more fascinating than anything else.
I mean, a lot of the things that we probably remember from our childhood, they're sort of aiming to be scary monsters. You know, the ghost in the library at the start of Ghostbusters.
Vince, you were from my childhood.
Yeah, that was scary. I was terrifying as a child. Absolutely terrifying.
I had to point on a toy where you touched me.
Don't laugh at him, Dan. You'll only encourage him.
It's weird. I remember I was going out with a previous girlfriend, and she used to believe in ghosts, all that cobblers. And I used to say, like, there's an old lady.
So you're a believer then, Dan?
Yeah, I'm a believer. So I used to say, like, in my parents' old house, like, in that room, like, the old lady passed away in there. And, like, it's kind of, sometimes there's stuff goes on in there. And she was, like, a bit weirded out by it. And then one night I came in from, like, having a drink, and I walked past that room and looked through the banisters. Obviously nothing was there, but I just quickened my pace slightly. I freaked myself out. This is pathetic. Easy done.
It's that idea though. Once you just get the thought in your head, you're like, you know, it's not real, but it's like, but in case it is, I'm just gonna jog on.
Yeah,
jog on.
I did it. I was picking up a pizza the other night, and
it was haunted. Oh,
holy jeez. But I was walking down an alleyway on the way to my car, and then halfway through the alleyway, I just suddenly thought to myself, "What if something happened here?" I was like, oh, it's not going to happen here. I still fucking ran for it.
You get a thing in your head, there might be something behind me, and you have to look around.
Yeah.
Because, I don't know, perhaps it goes back to sort of some ancient part of your brain that thinks you might be being stalked or something.
You see, I like those kind of stories that take those kind of things you don't even think about. And just kind of give them a little twist. I mean, I don't really have any examples in comics, but I think Doctor Who have a few, like the prickles on your back of your neck. They've kind of brought that up as it's actually a creature. And I always remember, I can't remember what the film was. It was the one with Christopher Walken in with about angels and demons and angelic war.
The Prophecy.
Prophecy.
Yeah, and always he has one with the little dimple underneath your nose above your lip, was where he kind of put his finger as you were a child to kind of tell you to be quiet. But, you know, those kind of little things, you think, oh, that's a really nice twist on something.
It's in the details, isn't it? Those little details that you can really spin into.
Yeah, well-observed details.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm. Well, I think we've covered horror, haven't we?
One thing you have not covered, actually, to be fair, which is criminal on horror, and that would actually be the tentacled love of certain creators.
What?
Like Lovecraft. Sorry.
Yeah. Oh, that's true. Yes. Well,
I mean, not mention Lovecraft. It's quite a huge influence.
Yeah, it's quite rare, isn't it?
He's like just a massive, towering influence.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
this weird thing. Much. Yeah, like maybe like 3 or 4 years ago, I'd never heard of him.
Yeah.
And then suddenly I got into him and I was like, fucking hell, loving this.
I love Lovecraft. It's quite funny saying it in those two words next to each other. Personally, I mean, like we previously touched on, it's an easy go-to, but I think, like you said earlier, Dan, that it's an endless mine, isn't it? Because yeah. I think with Lovecraft, he's always talking about like unnameable horrors, unseen things. It's always
you can't see your hair.
Yeah, which is brilliant because there's a never-ending encyclopedia of things that you can mine from. But I think that's a dangerous path to go because how can you draw an unnamed horror? Do you know what I mean? How could you, you know, what on earth is the colour out of space? The whole point of the colour out of space is that it's a colour that isn't on the spectrum. So you could never, you could never do that in any sort of shape or form. Unless, I think the only way you could do it is, and this is going to sound crazy, in a black and white story. Do you know what I mean? If you treat it like an old black and white film, so that you know everyone's reacting like it's like they're seeing a colour, but because the storytelling
there's
narrative,
no colour.
Yeah. Do you know what I mean? I think that's the only way you can get away with it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of remember I read the Shadow of Innsmouth and Shadow over Innsmouth and listened to an audiobook, which is fantastic, but the comic kind of. When he kind of the people had the Innsmouth look, it was always a bit too much and a bit too pronounced.
Yeah.
But I found Lovecraft stuff works better generally in the written. But each to their own. Yeah, in prose.
Yeah. I mean,
100% on that, I think. It is one of those things that does lose it slightly when you actually have to draw it. I mean, I love, is it Ian Colbard or the kind of versions he's doing? Mm. I mean, I love them and they do work quite well. And. But even then, you know, they've got the sounds, the taka 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 kind of sounds that kind of get made, and it goes through the page. But even that kind of it just loses it. You know, I can see what they're trying to do, and they do it well.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's not nowhere near as scary as the descriptive. Like we heard a sound, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Agreed.
I will say, like his At the Mountains of Madness is a phenomenal book. I think that's my favourite of his. You've also got Charles Dexter Ward, haven't you, Sean? Have you got that one as well?
Yeah, The Case of Charles Dexter Ward.
Yeah, that's a completely different style of story, though, isn't it? That's more of a sort of mystery type thing, isn't it? If I remember correctly.
Yeah. It's a little more.
I think Colbard is the best for me at doing the Lovecraft genre, shall we say?
Yeah,
and you can call it a genre. There's so much of it now, isn't there? Really, that.
Oh yeah, I'd say so.
Yeah,
well, it's an oversaturated market in itself. Really, there's you can't not see a Cthulhu or some kind of tentacle creature somewhere.
Yeah, but would you? Oh, that it might probably be. I would say in modern horror, I would say there's zombies and there's the Lovecraft sort of creatures. I think they're the two main ones at the moment. Really, I would say.
I think the conventions I've gone to, definitely, that's. I mean, if anything, I'd almost put Lovecraftian stuff above anything else. It seems to be hitting both sides, comedical and horror.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah, because, you don't find so many supremely funny zombie books, I suppose. Unless they're books like Stiffs, which is just funny a title in itself, but the book's fantastic. So there's
Stiffs.
You just got that, Dan.
A carryover joke from last week. I should have used it more then.
Oh,
Beavis
dear.
And Butthead style.
Yeah. Oh, don't start. I knew you were going to start with the voice. Right. So horror, you know, I think there's plenty more great horror to come. And one thing I love about talking about horror this week was discovering some of these awesomely creepy stories that I had no idea existed, which is amazing.
Yeah.
And we haven't, as with all our subjects, we'll be revisiting this probably same time next year, Halloween special. I love the fact that we got a Halloween special. I don't know why. You know, I think we'll have to start doing Christmas specials, won't we? Or Dan Butcher specials, that's what we'll do.
The Great Wealth of Christmas Comics.
Oh yeah, yes, that's a good point. Actually, we might as well put this out, like, because I am thinking about having a topic about Christmas comics, but how many good ones are there out there? I know there's Santa Claus versus the Nazis, which is going to be available at Thought Bubble, which you can pick up there. I just got to say that just in case Emily Owen hunts me down.
That'd be fantastic.
That is going to be amazing. Wonderful art by Gav Mitchell. But in terms of other Christmas comics, what is there? You know, so we'll put a shout out closer to the time. But can you think of any, Dan?
I can remember one off the top of my head, an old Thor comic that I had that was set around Christmas.
Yeah,
but that was it. Was so great, I can barely recall it.
This is the week of forgettable comics, but yes, but thanks. Let us know any more horror recommendations. What you thought of this topic, much like last week's topic. Thank you very much for everyone that got involved and started on the discussion. We're going to keep it going every week, so thank you for getting in touch. We haven't announced next week's show yet, but there will probably be an extra little bit in it, because obviously yesterday, as I'm speaking now, was Nottingham Comic Con. Which myself, Mr. Edmonds, sorry, Tony,
and Mr. Blobby,
he's going to kill me when he gets back. Myself, Sean, and Tony were at. Dan, unfortunately, couldn't make it because you were too busy saving lives, weren't you?
Was I?
Yeah.
Oh yes.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Sorry. No one knows you're a superhero. Okay. No. Sorry about that. Yeah. It was a great day. Fantastic day. We'll speak about it more on next week's show, because we're going to be talking about interaction at conventions. And so cool. It's going to be another sort of convention sort of centric show. But we might actually have some audio from the actual Nottingham Comic Con. We'll see. If we don't,
maybe
don't hold me to it. You can't trust me. That's what I'm saying.
I'd love to hear from people who run webcomics and how they interact with their audience. And because obviously that's a completely different way of doing it, but
you mean having a webcomic and then going to a convention?
That and talking via comments and through your kind of the interaction with your fans online.
Yeah, because a few people did talk about webcomics at the convention. So nice one, Dan. But I think, are you ready, Dan? Are you ready?
I was born ready.
Oh, here we go. It's that time.
We need a theme tune for this.
Yeah, we do need a theme tune for this.
Dun, 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 action, dun. That's your theme tune right there.
Yeah. I said I wanted a bed of music from the Rambo film or something.
And do you know, if someone can take what Sean just did then and put a bed of music behind it, that's what we'll use as a theme.
Awesome.
There you go, folks. There's the challenge. It's this week's Action Dan question. We love 80s action films on this show. We mention them pretty much every week, don't we?
Yeah.
And then one day Dan Butcher said, you know, it's probably your specialist subject, isn't it, really?
I would probably say we've gone on Mastermind. I'd probably say Celebrity Mastermind as opposed to normal Mastermind.
Oh, why? Because it's a little bit easier.
Yeah.
So,
fine line between criminal and celebrity, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Criminal. Yes. So, Action Dan is the quiz, which we've actually amped up because there's a little prize as well. Dan loves 80s action films. So, we say every week a listener will give us a question and we'll test him every week. And if you actually manage to sort of like stump him, you'll actually do a little sketch, won't you, Dan? Just a random sketch.
Yeah, a little sketch for you.
Yes.
Completely random.
Yes.
Last week I did.
I was just going to say, as a guest of the show, I can actually just concur for everyone that Dan does not know what this question is yet.
No.
This isn't like a setup. He generally has no idea.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. Last week's question from Lukas Kowalczyk managed to get him stumped with the film Cyborg. Which then, Dan, you did a fantastic sketch of.
I did the picture of the bad guy, Fender,
from
Cyborg.
Yeah, which looked awesome. You might have seen it online. Thank you. We've put it on the Facebook page, haven't we, etc. So there you go. You know, he's willing to put in the graft if you can stump him. But enough of this nonsense. Let's get to the meat of what we're talking about. You want this week's question, yes?
Well, of course.
It comes from, and I'm apologies if I say this name wrong, Umar Ditter, who's emailed us. Who's cool. a creator in their own right, because I noticed that they were in the Nottingham Comic Con special comic, which was out at the show.
Yep.
But here's your question, Dan. We all know Peter Weller was cast as RoboCop, but can you name one of the two other actors that were shortlisted?
Michael Ironside.
Nope.
Was one. No?
Nope.
That's interesting.
You can keep, by the way, when it comes to this question, he can have as many goes as he wants. It's not.
See, I know they sort of had bigger people in mind, and then they had to knock it down because of the confines of the suit. Lance Henriksen.
You just got. You need to get one of these two other actors that he's got as the answer.
Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Boom. Got it.
Yeah.
Yay.
I thought it was Arnie.
The answer.
Thanks for letting me have more than one guess.
Well, you know, it would be a bit harsh otherwise, wouldn't it? The answer that we had was Arnold Schwarzenegger and Rutger Hauer.
Ah, okay.
One of the two other actors that were shortlisted.
Nice one.
Good choices, because both sounded rather robotic back in the day.
Yeah, they did. Yep. And that's RoboCop is also Dan's favourite film. So,
it is my favourite film.
Yeah, so if you were stumped
on that
one. I'm
slightly ashamed I didn't know that straight away. Should have got it.
Well, you got the answer, Dan. That's all that mattered.
Got another second guess.
You knew that there were some decent names shortlisted. I would have had no idea myself.
So. Yeah, I think kind of they've had to, like, they did the original RoboCop, and they wanted to make sequels and stuff. Obviously, Peter Weller was around for the second one, but they've actually just had to recut and retool the original suit in to fit in other actors. And in the TV series, there's there's like four TV movies, and the guy's quite stocky, and RoboCop looks huge and stupid and bulky. But yeah, that's the reason why, because we're all using the same fucking suit.
I did think the suit looked quite good for the actual TV show.
Yeah.
It was now actually, you know why. It was actually the same suit. Bloody hell.
See shots where it's like a fat man in a t-shirt that's too short. So you just see like this gut coming out from underneath the metal chest plate. Just like trying to put a giant kind of tub of goo in a tin can.
Oh, God. Oh, what an image. Oh, speaking of horror. Oh, so there you go. Sorry, Umar, but Dan outdid you that week. But it just goes to show that he doesn't know everything, even about the things he loves.
Yeah. I tried to acquire all knowledge in the universe, but it's proven a little more difficult than I imagine. I have to keep it focused on 80s action films, and even then, I'm still lacking.
Yes. But...
But that's two for one.
Two for one, Dan. Yeah. Doing well, son. You're doing well. I don't know how many weeks we'll keep doing this until we decide, well, I've had enough.
Yeah.
Email us your question. If you think you can stump him, email us your questions to awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Now, all we need is a question and the answer, because, seriously, Dan knows way more than I do. So I will, you know, if you don't give me an answer, I could just leave him just answering all night and have no idea.
It's never ending.
Yeah, but but I look forward to seeing what next week's is. Yeah, I was glad we didn't have a Van Damme question this week. So
no.
Yeah, well, we had two Van Damme questions in a row, didn't we?
Of course.
Yeah. And
Brian Van Der is a big fan of Van Damme. We were discussing the week about how. I think he's a Mac Daddy.
Yeah, Brian Vander is the Van Damme king, isn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was pointing out he wears a particularly ridiculous wig in Cyborg.
What, if Brian Vander? No, he doesn't.
No. Van Damme, like, when he appears younger in the film, they've got him wearing this wig, and it's fucking awful.
I haven't seen that film in so long. I need to watch that again. Is it a film that's dated well?
It kind of looks like the 1980s version of what they thought the apocalypse would be like. So,
say no more.
Give it a watch. Some of the old stop motion, the special effects are fucking hilarious.
I've just googled the wig. My God, that is horrific.
It's really bad. It's
like someone's just shot a dog and it's landed on his head.
I also love the term googling the wig. Sounds filthy. Do we have any shout outs this week, lads?
Yes. When you listen to the show, Dan Charnley's new webcomic Death Metal will be live. Yes. I don't actually have the web address here, but if you Google his name, I'm sure it'll pop up in his Twitter feed. You should go and check that out because it looks really good. We've been privy to a few pages.
Yeah.
And go check that out.
Yes. Thoroughly recommended. Dan Charnley, speaking of horror, the dude loves horror and he knows what he's talking about. He's got great art style as well. So we have to get him on the show properly, won't we? One day.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
Yeah. Proper nice bloke. I'll edit that bit out so he doesn't hear it. in terms of shout-outs, Sean, do you have any?
I just got two, really. First one being finishing at Nottingham. So, thanks to the whole crew at Nottingham, really, for a great kind of convention, making us feel very welcome. It was very good.
Yep.
Also, shout-out to Reckless Hero, because I picked up Sheriff 3, which is fantastic.
Nice.
And they're always good lads. And then finally, I just wanted to give a shout-out to Andy Fairhurst, who is a lovely guy and an amazing artist. So we met there last year, but he wasn't there this year. But there was some of his artwork being wrongfully sold by certain people in framed.
For anyone that doesn't know Andy Fairhurst's work, he's like a designer and artist. He does amazing sort of prints and
top downs.
Yeah, they're top downs. You've probably seen them. There's a famous Guardians of the Galaxy one where they're all from the top and their shadows are being cast really long. He's done a set of three of Back to the Future prints, hasn't he, that line up quite nicely next to each other with the cars and then a train. Is that correct?
Yeah. And he's also done the Star Wars ones and also does a lot of Pixar, and he's actually had a lot of his stuff recently has been put on limited edition official tickets for Pixar films.
Yeah.
But he's such a humble guy. His artwork's amazing, but he's one of these people that kind of, you know, you talk to him about it and he's kind of like, well, you know, theirs is really good. It's like, yours is amazing.
Yeah.
But he wasn't there and he's such a nice guy that I kind of felt really bad that his stuff was kind of on display without his permission. So I just wanted to give him a shout out so everyone actually looks for his stuff rather than anywhere else, because he does limited editions, but he does them properly. Once he's sold them, he just never reprints them. So check out his stuff. It's pretty awesome.
So what, someone had illegal prints of his work?
They just found it from DeviantArt, printed it out, framed it, were selling it for a tenner. You know, the usual thing with a load of other... there was a whole wall of them, basically. But I just happened to recognise his, and I know he's very strict on his limited editions. So,
You gave him a shout, didn't you? Just sort of say, are you aware that this is happening? Which is...
I came across someone this week who was basically doing that on Twitter. Like, they were putting through images through a filter on Photoshop and then print it out and then taking a picture of it with their pen next to it. And it's like, you're not fooling anyone. It's just ridiculous to think you'd get away with that.
I'll take that down.
I wanted to take a picture of some really well-known art and then like print it out, put my pen next to it.
Mona Lisa.
We're working really hard this weekend. Hope you guys like it.
I think that's we're certainly going to talk more about that. We've talked about that sort of shenanigans happening before, haven't we?
I didn't want to bring it up as another topic. I just kind of wanted to give him some praise.
But I think definitely Andy's work is amazing. I've always been a huge admirer.
I think it falls more to the cons to do something about it. As in, it should have like you when you sign up to get a table, whatever, and what you're selling, you're kind of holding your head up saying, all this stuff I've got legit right to sell, and if you're caught doing otherwise, you're going to be asked to leave.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, the conventions can only do so much, can't they, because they're not going to know everyone's work, so it has to be sort of to and fro, doesn't it, really?
Yeah.
But like Sean did, if you see someone's work being used irresponsibly, then certainly tell the creator who's getting shafted about it, and then tell the convention about it, you know, shut it down. That's the best way to stop it, really. So
I mean, you can't expect the convention, the people running the convention, to know every single little piece of artwork inside out. So if you see something like that and mention it, you've done your bit.
Yeah.
It's not easy if it was one. I think they had about four or five different pieces.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's bad.
Yeah. Buy Andy's work yourself. It's amazing. So there you go. And my shout-outs, really, I just echo what Sean said, really. Nottingham was brilliant. The organisation was great. It was a fantastic day. You'll hear a bit more about it next week. But, yeah, I had a great time. It was a long day.
Nice one.
Long day. Hard working day, because let's not forget, folks, that it is work, isn't it? Even though we have a good laugh and meet people, it is also work. Much like this show. It's bloody hard work. No, these lovely gents make it easy. So let's give the folks
an easy lover.
Sean is the most musical guest we've ever had.
That's a good point. Shit, sorry.
Oh dear, I never would have thought like this would be the karaoke episode.
Tell you what, one small press book that does do horror well is Cognition.
Yeah.
That's a bit of a late call. It's really well done in there. It's fantastic.
Well, we're on the recommendations, Dan.
There you go. I recommend, apart from Cognition, I've got another one to shout about, which is Laudanum Horror. I think we mentioned them before. It's by Mike Sandbrook, Rob Jones, and the artwork in this, done by Alistair Wood, is absolutely fantastic. It's really spot on. It's really good.
I think he's certainly, he's on the rise, isn't he? It's only good.
Oh, he's definitely going places after seeing that. So well done. A quick synopsis to the story. This is from the press release. After the funeral of his wife, Percy is alone in his home, heartbroken and confused. Why couldn't he save her? What took her from him? And now, why is it back for him? His sanity failing him, Percy tries to unravel the memories and find some answers. What really happened in that grand old house? Laudanum is through the Horror kind of imprint. 16 pages, and it's only selling for £2. It goes on sale in Thought Bubble on November 5th, or you can pick it up from Marius Comics, from their Facebook page, Marius Comics, facebook.com, Marius Comics, or just do a web search for them and they'll pop up.
Awesome.
Well worth it.
Yeah, Thought Bubble this very weekend as we speak. I can't believe how early that's turned up this year. Yeah, so much awesome stuff that we're going to hear about for next week's show.
So, yeah.
Yeah, it should be interesting. You have to let us know how it goes, folks. Sean, what would you like to recommend to folks? Can be anything you want.
Can be anything I want. Anal sex is a...
Channeling Tony there.
It's a pain in the ass. Ba-dum-bum-bum.
I had someone from last week's show. They said to me, Dan, I was a great show. I didn't know what Blumpkins was, so I had to Google it. And I can understand why you were disgusted. So yeah.
The Awesome Comics Podcast, corrupting the world one listener at a time.
But yes, no, unfortunately, I've been kind of really out of it. I've been quite busy at the moment, so I haven't really read a lot new or done anything on that. So I'm going to be really cheeky, and I'm going to do a shout-out and recommendation for Descending Outlands, which is my comic, which is awesome.
Totally cool. That's totally fine.
Yeah.
So make sure you pick it up. You can kind of check out that and my portfolio at evilcat.com. That's evilcat, but with a K instead of a C.
Well, you do colouring. Your colouring is absolutely fantastic, Sean.
I'm a work in progress, but thank you.
It's doing really well. I mean, we spoke briefly before we came on, and you were saying that the Descending Outland 3-pack with issues 1, 2, and 3 was doing really well. And I think buying collected editions is a great way of sort of jumping straight into the tale and getting cracking.
Once you've got a couple of issues behind you, you know, I think it's almost... Would you say it's easier to get newer readers? You know, it's certainly, in some ways, it's almost more satisfying when they're picking up three issues at once. And I mean, I know Sean's latest issue, that, you know, that's the biggest issue so far, isn't it?
Yeah, it's about 52 pages or something, I think.
Yeah, that's big.
So you're getting your money's worth. Plenty of story in those three issues.
But so I think it's... Sorry, here and then.
I was saying, where can you get it if you don't see you at a convention?
You can buy it online from evilcat.com. I've got a shop on there. Also, descendingoutlands.com. Either one works. And also, it's on Comixology, but I've been really lazy and only put the first issue up, so I've got to put the other two up there now.
Well, it should be quicker. Yeah, no, but it should be quicker getting those issues up, actually. Once you've got the first one up, it doesn't take as long, does it, Dan?
No, yeah, it's a lot faster.
Mm.
But I think it just adds some security. I think there's so many independent comics out there that that just have kind of one issue and then either it doesn't progress further or it takes kind of, you know, a couple of years. I mean, it's taken, well, me and you, Vinny, it's probably a year an issue really at the moment with everything else that goes on.
Yeah.
So I think it gives people confidence when you've got two or three that, you know, that it is something that's going to continue.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. And it's nice when they come, like, if you go into that, like that certain, you only get to one show a year. If you keep appearing at that show, they can pick up the new issue each time.
Yeah. Well, I just had a lot of people from this one that remembered me last year, so they bought three because they had one and two last year and loved it, and same we have with Melksham, so it's always lovely to have people that seem to invest some time into it.
Yeah, because the returning customers are the ones, you know, they're some of the best ones, really, aren't they? Cause just, you know, it's nice to know that someone's gone away, read your comic, and then come back and wanted another chapter of it.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So, heartily recommend Descending Outlands. It's a cracking book. My recommendation for this week is another Image book. It's one I've been wanting to talk about for a little bit. Well, at least shout it out. Have you ever heard of the book Witch Doctor?
No.
No. Ah. There's two volumes of it at the moment. Volume 1, Under the Knife, and Volume 2, Malpractice, available now. It's written by Brandon Seifer and art by Lucas Kettner. And here's a basic synopsis for it. Dr. Morrow's looking for a vaccine for the apocalypse. And in his quest to understand the biology of the supernatural, he faces vampires, demonic possession, fairies, and more. Now, it's essentially, if you imagine an H.P. Lovecraft-style version of House, if filtered through monsters like Del Toro and The Strain and stuff like that. It's looking at the supernatural through a very sort of medical eye. And there's all these, you know, there's all this witchcraft and different sort of arcane magic going on. But it's about this crazy Dr. Vincent Morrow, brilliant name. And he's a bit creepy and he knows all about how to defeat these monsters. And there's like vampires that are creatures that they're more like a worm that goes down your throat. And one of the beautiful things about this book is they actually figured out the biology of it as well. Lucas's artwork is amazing. It's very reminiscent, if you ask me, of like, my mind has just gone blank then. Bernie Wrightson. I can't believe I forgot his name because he's one of my favourite artists of all time. But classic horror artist Bernie Wrightson. And Lucas is so much detail to all the pages, but also in the back of the book, in the sketchbooks, you can see like the evolution of characters, and like he'll do a cutaway of a creature so you can see the organs and how everything works within it. So he's figured out the actual biology of the monsters that he's creating in the book. And I love that. It's sort of like medical sort of like sketches. But as well as the beautiful art, where there's a fantastic sort of arcane sort of action adventure story involving sort of weird otherworldly monsters and like vampires. And there's a character that goes around with them that's actually called Penny Dreadful. And she's like a sort of a small demonic girl that sort of her head sort of splits apart and she eats things. It's pretty twisted, but very funny and an awesome adventure comic. And I love it. There's two volumes of it currently. Out from Image, so I thoroughly recommend you get it. Just visually, it's just beautiful to look at. But if you're into sort of weird tentacle creatures and monsters of all kinds, then Witch Doctor is one that I think deserves more eyes on it because you don't hear about it too much. So yeah, it was actually
into tentacle creatures.
Yeah, yeah. It's actually Robert Kirkman started the Skybound imprint, didn't he?
Yes.
When he started that, Witch Doctor was the first original book to be printed through the Skybound imprint.
Okay.
So
cool.
Yeah. So, but I think when it came out, more people talked about the fact that he was, you know, they used his name more than the actual book's name.
If you know what I mean. Yeah.
It's like, oh, Robert Kirkman's picked this book. Let's talk about the book more. Yeah. So, yeah, I love it. But there you go, folks. A creepy, wonderful book for you to check out. And there's lots to check out this week, isn't there, really?
Yeah.
It's wonderful. It hasn't been a horrific nightmare, which it's been wonderful, gents. You've been wonderful. I won't have nightmares about this episode like I thought I would. So there you go. No.
Before we close, if you're going to watch a film on Halloween, what's the film you're going to go to?
Oh, my go-to Halloween film?
Yeah, or say the one you're going to be watching later today, since this is coming out on Halloween.
Now, I know my favourite film's The Thing, but in terms of Halloween, I would say Trick or Treat. That Halloween anthology film from a couple of years ago. In terms of what I consider to be almost a perfect Halloween film.
Oh, that's the one with all the stories that bleed into each other.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that was good. I only saw that quite recently.
Yeah, that's a perfect sort of seasonal. You know, you don't get many. You get lots of Christmas films like that. You know, those sort of anthologies or that sort of style, but you don't really. It just celebrates Halloween itself. I love that. So, Trick or Treat, that would be my go-to.
Sean?
Yeah, it was the same with any of that going down the thing, or as we mentioned it, 30 Days of Night, because I haven't seen that since I initially saw it in the cinema and thought it was amazing, so I do need to rewatch it. But yeah, last night I actually watched Stonehurst Asylum. I found it on Netflix with a high rating.
Oh, Kate Beckinsale. I saw that one. Yeah,
I actually really enjoyed it. I thought it was quite a clever idea. So, so that's my recommendation. Recently watched it.
What about you, Daniel? Peppa Pig's Dark Adventure?
We listened to that fucking Disney CD again. I'm going to go back to a film I haven't watched in absolute years, and it's the George Romero, Day of the Dead. When they were trapped in the bunker. Watched Dawn of the Dead all the fucking time. So I'm going to give... I really underrated Day of the Dead when I first saw it, but I think I might have underestimated it, and I'm going to give it another crack.
I think one of the things about Day of the Dead... I haven't seen it for a while, but I remember the last time I saw it, the soundtrack was so super 80s.
Yeah, oh, big time. Yeah. It's like synth.
Yeah, but it had... Yeah. You'll have to look... Are you going to watch it, Dan?
I'm going to watch it, yeah.
Good. I look forward to seeing it. Because, we can't talk too much about it because Sean hasn't seen it yet, but me and Dan both watched Doctor Strange. I know Tony has, so we might let you all know what we thought of it next week.
I think it was really well done.
Yeah.
I thought it was really well done.
Yeah, I loved it. That's what I was going to say.
I don't usually say this, but I wish I'd have seen it in 3D. I saw it in 2D. I wish I'd have seen it in 3D.
I saw it in 3D. It was great. But if you're going to see it in 3D, for God's sake, see it on an IMAX or, you know, some special sort of screen that doesn't dull the colours. I was on an X Plus screen, so, you know, the colours were as they're supposed to be. But if you see it in a normal cinema, I think you won't get the actual effect. Does that make sense?
That makes sense.
Yeah. Good.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. Oh, blimey. That's the first time that's ever happened in 70 episodes. Do you think it made sense, folks? I think it did. But if you disagree, there's several different ways you can get in touch with us to disagree with it. That was weak as a weak lemon drink, that segue.
Was good. I saw it coming and you delivered. I said, yes. Yeah.
It moved me. It was that perfect.
Do you agree with them? Then email us, awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. That's where you can send your Action Dan questions as well. If there's likewise, email us, tony.awesomecomicspod@gmail.com, with any events or anything that we should talk about on the next show. Follow us on Twitter, @TheAwesomePod, where we'll be releasing probably more polls to get people interactive. That sounds filthy when I say it like that.
Like getting the polls because it gives us a kind of a bit of a snapshot of kind of the listener base and generally what people like.
Yeah.
And it means you have to say poll every week.
poll. but also, I love the fact that they've become a sparking point for discussion amongst people. So, and that's the best thing. Another place that's a good place for discussion is the Facebook page, facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast. Normally, we all get involved on that one, don't we, Dan?
Yes, we all do.
Yes.
I just googled the Robocop question, and it said Michael Ironside, Arnold Schwarzenegger, and Rutger Hauer all considered for the title role.
Oh, so I was right. So you're shooting back at the person. Yeah. You got the question right, Dan. You didn't have to do that.
I know. I knew Michael Ironside had been considered. I knew it.
Don't fuck with the butcher.
Butcher by name, butcher by nature. Yeah. Right. On that sexy note.
And what a way to end the show. What pelvic thrusting out.
Oh dear. Thank you for listening to us. Awesomecomics.podbean.com. If you listen to us on iTunes, thank you very much. Leave us a lovely review. You know, the more good reviews we get, the more people will notice the show, and it helps get the word out. So we love it. So, and thank you to everyone that does leave a review.
And if you've got a bad review, then don't fucking post it.
Yeah, yeah, just fuck off.
Keep it to yourself.
I think they've got very much the attitude that we've had on the books tonight, as in it's just so they think so little of it they can't even bother to review it.
Well, at the same time, like, if you've got nothing good to say, don't say anything at all. Which why probably that's
presumably why we haven't got a lot of reviews.
We haven't got a lot of reviews. Oh God! Thank you for listening to us. If you listen to us on the Stitcher network, or likewise on the Podnose network, which we're now part of, thank you very much. Where can people find us online, Dan?
You can find me on Twitter at Vanguard Comic, and you can read Vanguard at vanguardcomic.com. And if you check out tomorrow, part of the Collective of Heroes, we've done like a Halloween art swap, which we've called Secret Satan, which is fucking nice. Brilliant. So we've all done Halloween pinups for each other's comics.
Awesome.
So check that out.
That sounds awesome. Where can people find you online, Sean?
They can find me at Evil Cat with a K, so evilcat.com. Which is my portfolio site, and also descendingoutlands.com, or on Twitter at Dobes2. That's the number two.
The number two.
Someone took Dobes. Outrageous.
I had Mike Garley thought it was fucking hilarious to have a whole discussion with me about that, how he preferred Dobes1. He was much better. It was like, that really good comic. Oh, hang on a sec. That was Dobes 1, wasn't it? Or Dobes 2. Shit.
Classic Garley.
Not like having a username that just puts you as second best. Yeah. I'm going to rename it to Dobes 2 or lower.
You're first in our hearts, Sean. There you go.
Yeah.
That's the only time I've been nice to him all year. Yeah. So you can find me online at Jester Diablo and find out more about my comic, including there's also like a free sort of Halloween sort of special comic that you can download for free, the Red Mask from Mars.com. So thanks, gents. It's been wonderful, emotional, scary, terrifying, everything a Halloween special needs to be. So we hope everyone out there has a wonderful Halloween. Watch some scary movies. Halloween's is probably my favourite sort of holiday of the year. I know Christmas gets a lot of play, but I think, you know, Halloween.
Anything for Halloween, you don't have any time off.
I know. Yeah, it's bollocks, isn't it?
Should be a holiday.
It's shit.
A holiday.
I hate Halloween. It's rubbish.
Thanks, Dad. Have a fucking day off.
Yeah, let's have a day off. Let's all have the day off. Yes. Thank you for listening, folks. And from Sean, Dan, and myself. Have an awesome week. Read lots of comics. And shall we finish it off with another pelvic thrust, Sean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, why not?
Yeah, after three then, all three of us. One, two, three.
Hopefully the piss sequence won't be making it into the outtakes.
Oh dear, the piss sequence. That would be the other name for this episode, wouldn't it, really?